Good evening once again to the Water Song Line and Center for Sacred Studies, listening to our Mother Waters, the path of purification. We've been having some wonderful weeks together, sharing our stories and our prayers and our visions, our practices with one another. And it's been a beautiful community that's growing, and I want to give thanks to everyone who's on the call and for those who are going to be listening to us in the future. And I encourage people to share these recordings so that we can all grow this circle of love and prayers. Every week more people have been registering, and we're really grateful for that. And this is what it's about. This is how the waters, she hears our prayers, and then we in turn hear her, and we grow that beautiful wave of sacred reciprocity and healing. And tonight's topic is water as the primordial womb of the mother and the sacred medicine wheel, and how we can deeply listen and receive messages from this holy womb of the mother. So I'm going to, we have on the call, we have Omide Yeye Oshun, we have Olu, we have Bob Boyle, we have Robin, Tukrela's Youngblood, and I'm really grateful for all of our Water Song Line Council members who are not here, and the ones that are here in spirit, the ones that are here physically. So I want to open it up to you, dear Robin, if you would start us off with a prayer and some of your deep wisdom. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Okay, well, grandmothers and grandfathers, Wankantanka, Tumkashla, Kulin Chutin, Allah, all the names that we call the divine mystery. At this moment in time, we call in our ancestors, our guides, the protectors who help us all to form a sacred circle here. We call in the powers of the East, of new beginnings and new visions, of an understanding of why we are here. We call in the power of air and our mental capacities. We ask that we be fortified in our new visions, our new dreams, that what emerges truly from the core of our beings, our center, our soul. We call in the powers of the South, the sacred fire, the passion and creativity that inspires and informs us and leads us into our life purpose. We ask that in this time and this place that we learn more and more about what we're here to do, why we came in a body at this time to this incarnation, and how we are here to serve and help all that is. We call in the powers of the sacred West, the place of healing and introspection in the dream time, the beautiful sacred waters that ebb and flow throughout all divine time and space. We ask that the waters purify us and wash us clean, that our tears that flow into Grandmother Ocean, the salt waters, that each of those tears lift something for all humanity and all our relations, and that as we grow and heal, we are inspired to work more and more to help the community of all beings. We call in the ancestors of the North, those who inform us through our DNA, who activate the gifts within us for the purpose of lifting creation to its next evolutionary level. In this time, in this space, in this way, we accept all that comes through the lineages that we carry, both the ancestral lineage that resides in our bodies and the lineage of all the lifetimes we have experienced, the cultures and the spiritual pathways that we have followed. In this time, we ask that each of those gifts and talents be released so that each of us can use them more fully in the present moment and as we walk our paths. We give thanks to Father Sky and Mother Earth. We ask that we be aligned to the divine blueprint of all creation and to the grounding of Mother Earth, and that we bring all of that into the core, the center of our beings, so that we live from full authenticity in each and every moment. Aho metakuyasin.
Ashe, thank you. Thank you so much.
You know,
so
one,
Robert,
of the things, one of the things that I've been thinking about, Anne, is we're talking mostly about the waters here, and that's fabulous because we certainly need to do the work to heal what's happening to our waters. And yet, we come from four elements, and without any of those elements, we cannot live. So I think that it's really important to remember that there are ceremonies for the sacred fires, for the air, the breath of spirit, for Mother Earth, and for all beings as well.
Yeah.
You started to say something?
Yeah, no, I'm saying yes. Thank you. Important.
I love the title that you gave to tonight's session here, Primordial Womb. The sacred waters carry everything that we need to birth into existence. And nothing can happen without the waters of life. Yeah, even semen that travels into the womb to inseminate an egg and create a birth has to flow through water. So everything that we do on this planet is infilled with water. And our waters really need to be pure in order for us to be able to experience fully all that life is. Very silent in there.
It's good, Robin. Please continue. It's really good to hear you speak. I just want to encourage you to let it flow and continue, and then the other ones of us might join in, you know. But thank you for leading us on this path right now. It's beautiful.
Well, you know, Anne, when you and I first started talking about this, we were talking about the difference between before 2012 and after 2012.
Yes.
Before 2012, the world was embedded in fear. It was the paradigm on Earth, and the energy that shifted when people all over the world did the ceremonies on December 21st of 2012 was to lift that fear and to bring in the source of love. And many of us were doing that before anyway, but something really magical happened on December 21st, 2012. We were at Angkor Wat. And we were doing ceremonies with the Buddhist monks of Angkor Wat who, you know, in that 9,000-year-old temple, they don't work with women. And we went with our Cambodian interpreter to the monks a couple of days beforehand to ask if we could do ceremony at Angkor Wat. And to ask the monks if they would participate with us and lead us in those ceremonies, because it's their place, not ours. And when they found out that I was going to be leading the ceremonies for the group that we were with, there was a bit of consternation. And the elder monk, who must have been at least in his 80s, told us that he would have to go and pray. And we waited while he did that. He was gone about half an hour. And he came back and gave a very simple nod that, yes, he would do it. In Cambodia, because of the rule of the Khmer Rouge in the 60s and 70s, there are no men left in the age group of 40 to 60 years old. Okay? They were all killed. So it was either the very old monks or very young monks, 20 and below. And they were all looking at us as if, oh, this is very strange. What's she going to do? And there's a beautiful moat around Angkor Wat that is human-built, and it has lovely, lovely waters in it. And, of course, the Buddhists do some of the most beautiful water ceremonies in the world. They light candles and float them on leaves, and they send flowers down the rivers and so forth. So we brought a beautiful chased silver urn full of sacred water from many, many different rivers in the world. And the elder monk blessed that water first, and then the monks chanted and threw flowers and leaves into the water. And I watched the spirits lift in that place, that sacred place, as we did that. And I listened to the waters and felt their joy as the monks were doing this ceremony. And then when he finished, he turned to me and we started chanting, and we also offered flowers, and we offered some of these sacred waters from other rivers into this moat. And at first the younger monks were watching us with great skepticism. And then as time went on, they started lifting their eyes and looking around. And by the time we finished, I could see that they knew that something had happened. Yeah? After that, they led us into the center of Angkor Wat Temple. The center of the temple is probably 100 steps straight up. I was recovering from a broken ankle. I looked at those steps and went, I'm not sure we're going to do that, but we did. And when we got to the center of the temple, the younger monks had lit 100 candles. And they invited us into the central part of the temple there, and they chanted and chanted and chanted. And I watched ancient energies that had been totally encaged in the fear of the world from all the wars and the oppression that has happened in Cambodia over the centuries. Mm-hmm. I watched those spirits lift. I watched that energy change. And after they finished, they invited us to sing and pray as well. We sang, we drummed, we prayed. And at the end, the elder monk took a flower and began to dip it in the water in the urn and bless everyone with it. And I waited until everybody else had been blessed. And then he beckoned me forward and blessed me with the water, and then handed me the flower so that I could bless him. And what I knew from that was that an entire rebalancing of the masculine and the feminine had happened in that moment. I think one of the major reasons that we are here on Mother Earth at this time is to help rebalance this energy. The patriarchal energy came in about 5,000 years ago. And the imbalance at that time is much of what, it's hard to say which came first, the chicken or the egg, whether the fear came first and that's why patriarchy started, or patriarchy started and that initiated the fear. Whichever it was, however, that energy has been totally implanted in the DNA structures of Earth for a very long time. And since December 21st, many of us on the planet have been working to restore the balance and the harmony of the sacred masculine and feminine. We do that with the waters, we do that with the fire, we do that with ceremonies for the air and for Mother Earth. Just recently I was in Cape Town, South Africa, and as many of you know, a mountain fell down on many of us on March 22nd, equinox this year. I rode the mud in my house, was underneath the water for what they say was 3 minutes, and if that's true, I can't hold my breath for 3 minutes, so I definitely was reborn. Coming through that mudslide, I very clearly heard Mother's pain. I heard that she did not want that mountain to come down. She held it up as long as she could, that there were many things that were done on that mountain that were human error. A place where they had clear cut the trees off the mountain. They had been told not to clear cut there because it would affect the groundwater in the mountain. The place where they clear cut is exactly where the mountain split off.
Mm-hmm.
The mountain is glacial till. There was more rain than in the past recorded history in that month. So not having the tree roots to hold that and absorb that water and recycle it caused a failure for the mountain. There was a log jam at the bottom of the mountain from past landslides that hadn't been nearly as catastrophic. Logs don't hold water back. The river undercut the logs. The part of the mountain that slid at the bottom slid directly behind that log jam. On top of which, the state and county had had forewarning since 1999 of a grave future catastrophic event, and they allowed us to live there without telling us. So many human errors. And when I felt Mother's pain, and I came out of the mud and the water, I also heard that I had to be a bigger voice for Mom. And I've been a fair voice for Mother for a long time. Nonetheless, I was pushed through the birth canal to speak in a much bigger way. From that point, I was told that we need to begin to dance. We need to dance to heal the earth. It's no longer about, gee, I need to heal myself. So what can Mother Earth and all our relations give to me to help me heal? We're beyond that time now. This time is about, I'm here for a purpose. Somehow I'm here to serve Mother Earth and all our relations. What is my purpose? What is my journey? How do I serve? How can I help to heal Mother Earth? So in Cape Town, I asked the community there if they would be willing to dance for 2 days and fast for 2 days to ask those questions and make those prayers and to offer their gratitude through their bodies to Mother for all that she does to support us. And there's a tree in a certain area where we've done vision quests before. It's a beautiful cypress tree, four trunks, 200 or 300 years old. The trunks are, two people can extend their arms around each trunk. And the trunks face the four directions. We danced under this huge tree. We created an arbor that was 60 feet across. 20 people danced, 14 women and 6 men. My friend Kailash Kokapelli was there, and he was lead drummer. And we had 4 to 8 drummers at all times. And we fasted, and we danced, and we prayed. In the east, we prayed for new direction for ourselves. In the south, we prayed for our families, our partnerships, and our purpose in being here. In the west, we prayed for whatever needed to be healed and released, both in the tree, in Mother Earth, in the imbalance between the males and the females. And then we took it all to the tree. We gave that to the tree, and we asked for it to be lifted. In the north, we prayed for the gifts that we all have and how they're to serve the world. We danced that the first day, and the second day we danced for Father Sky and Mother Earth and ourselves, the core of our beings, and all the people, all the nations, be they the animal nations, the plant nations, the stone people, the star beings, everyone. And when we finished that dance, we had a Kalahari Bushman, a chief, a Nama chief with us, and two Xhosa women who shared their dance with us. We had a baboon grandfather who watched us quite cogently. He really had his eyes on us. Toward the end, he kind of leaned back and stuck his fist under his chin and gave a big yawn and took off. And at that point, we felt like, okay, well, he figures we're done, so I guess we are. The community there had never purified in this way before. We did sweat lodges before and after. They'd never fasted like this before. They'd never fasted for 2 days. And they'd never done a dance like this. And what happened for them was very profound. We were all very conscious that the energy was being shifted and that every step that we made was a prayer and that every song that we sang moved energy. I watched at one point where I sent people to the tree to release whatever it is that they needed to release. And I watched this gigantic cypress tree take this energy, go down into her roots and pull up some of the poisons that have been held in that land for so, so long, and send it up through her branches out into Father Sky to allow it to dissipate. I don't think that we lifted all that energy, but we certainly lifted a great deal. This dance had to start in South Africa. I was called there in 2012, directly because of the imbalance of the masculine and the feminine. South Africa is where the female mutilation of female genitalia began. It is the cradle of civilization. It has to be rebalanced first. And from that place, I think we did a great deal of that. This dance will continue for at least another 3 years there. And at the end of the dance, the dancers told me, well, we could have danced for a third day fasting. And I said, good, because you will next year. And the year after that, we will dance for 4 days fasting. I received huge blessings just by being able to witness what these dancers were doing. It was such an honor to be a part of that and to be able to facilitate it. Yeah. And I know that this dance is going to go around the world. It's going to happen for one day in Thailand in January. And it looks like it's going to happen in Europe, probably in Sweden, in July. And what I've been told about this dance is that eventually it will go to the four corners of Mother Earth because Mother Earth needs this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very different dance from... I've been a sun dancer for many, many years, and or involved in sun dance in some way for many years, and actually been a sun dancer for 7 years of my commitment. And 30 years ago, I was given a story by a Nakota medicine man who told me that the original sun dance was a women's dance, that all the ceremonies came through the women first. And that shocked me a bit. He told me that when the dance was a woman's dance, it was a dance of celebration to the tree of life, for all that we've been given. And he told me that when the imbalance came in, that the women decided to give the dance to the men, to ask the men to learn to suffer, because we women already know how. We suffer through menstruation, we suffer through giving birth, and suffering teaches humility. So the women gave the men this dance and asked them to pierce and hang from the tree to find out what suffering was about. Well, when I first heard that story, I thought, well, maybe that's just a story that came through his family. I don't know whether that's true for all sun dances or not. But over the last 35 years, I've been told that story by a Nakota, a Lakota, a Dakota, and a Cree medicine man. And they all tell the same story. When Derwin told me that story 35 years ago, he asked if he could have that dance, if he could bring it back and have it on a piece of land that I had by my reservation. I prayed about it, but I had to tell him no because it was high desert prairie and one footprint lasts for 20 years. So I couldn't bring 100 people to that land. Derwin never found the place to bring out that dance again. And year before I was told to go and share these teachings around the world, my Sundance grandfather, Frank Satie, did an adoption ceremony for me in Hawaii. And when he did that ceremony, he initiated me with the seven sacred rites. I was not expecting that. And I was actually quite terrified by it because I know the responsibilities he was giving. I already carried some of them. I am a sun dancer. I carry a pipe. I do sweat lodge and vision quest, Hanblechia. But I never expected to be given sun dance as a rite. And they don't give that to a woman. So I prayed about it. Shortly thereafter, Derwin White Lightning, the first medicine man who told me this story, died. And and the dream of this dance began to come back to me. That terrified me too, because I felt like I was being asked to do something with it and I didn't know what to do. After the mudslide, that dream came back, and then I read something about a Cherokee dance that hadn't been done for centuries either, called Dance to Heal the Earth, and they were both women's dances primarily, men supported. And when I read about Dance to Heal the Earth, everything coalesced for me. The dance that we're doing now is a dance of celebration, not a dance of suffering. It is a dance of offering, sacred offering, which might be called sacrifice. But sacrifice, as we've learned to understand it, is suffering. This dance is not about that kind of sacrifice. It's about joyously giving of ourselves, joyously fasting, offering the only thing we own, our bodies, to Mother. So that we can give back for all that we've received. And I think that this is really important in this time, because if we're to lift ourselves from the basis of fear, we need to celebrate rather than suffer. Even purification can be done without suffering. In the old times, when I was a young woman, sweat lodges were often 50 and 100 stones, and it practically burned us alive. And there was purpose in that. We needed that at that time. The whole world was very toxic, and none of us knew how to do anything about that. And the people that I was with at that time, we were all trying to recover from the wounding of 500 years of oppression to Native people. And we had to sacrifice. But this is a different time. This is a time of joy and celebration. Purification now is a matter of lovingly saying, I want to let go of whatever doesn't serve me. I want to be fully present in each and every moment to what I'm being asked, to giving of myself in the ways that support Mother and all our relations through love. With love at the core of my being. I sort of feel like I've talked enough for a little while. I'd love to hear from somebody else.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Robin, for all the different prayers that you just wove together here in your sacred action, and the reclamation of the balance and the women's ways. We too, Bob and I, we have similar stories that have been told to us about the ceremonies that we take care of, that they used to be taken care of by women. and then the women pass them over to the men to help the men, and also to give the men these sacred tasks. And yes, so I've heard very similar kinds of stories, very parallel. And I just want to thank you so much for the beautiful work that you're doing in bringing that celebration and offering back. And it's always been here, but to put it in the forefront. And I'm reminded about one thing, and then I want to offer it over to our other Water Songline Council members if they'd like to weave in with what you shared. My sister, Maria Alicia Campos Ferreira, somebody had asked her once, what do we do when the purification is complete and things are in balance? What are we going to do? And she said, well, what you do on the way to that is you sing and you dance and you pray and you make offerings. And what you do when it's complete, when we're in balance, is we sing and we dance and we pray and we make offerings. So I love that. I love that. That's what we do. And by bringing those paces of the rhythmic paces of our love onto this earth, we regenerate. We regenerate the culture. We regenerate the earth, and we call back the memory and the remembrance of that balance. And we offer a new, a whole new renewal way that of being together. So I wanted just to add that thread, and I wanted to ask if anybody wanted to share. My husband Bob would like to share, so I'm gonna we're gonna open it up to him. And again, thank you, Robin. This is so lovely. What an amazing floodgate that you opened. And here's Bob.
Thank you, Robin. It touched my heart that you mentioned my brother Derwin too, and I came to understand better through being included in a dance that he was associated with and leading, and how I understood these things was through what you mentioned about being touched by the weight or the burden or whatever you want to call it. It's also a privilege. It's also an opportunity of the responsibility, which to me, it goes back to what has been agreed upon spiritually. Just here's an example. Take the example of water. If water is good and drinkable and useful for life, there has to be a way to continue that relationship that is established by holy people many generations prior to the actual use of the water that we and the relation we have with the water now. So it's been shared with us that the way it was done was holy people, usually elder grandmothers, would establish a good relationship with water spirits. And they did it in the place where the water lived and chose to come forth and move. And it was done as an offering. It was such a solemn agreement that pieces of their own body, their skin or something, their hair, I don't know, something was left as an offering to these spirits.
Yes.
Blood. And so it was continued. The grandchildren, the girls, were taught this way. And they were taught the way to find the good water, which is recalled to us in this word water song line, because a lot of the information was embedded in songs, which were not just evocations of feeling, and they weren't descriptions of happenings. They were guides, that when you were going to go get the water, you begin a song and you follow what the song tells you to find the water, and once you're there, you sing the song again in the form that you have to in the presence of the spirits. And there are stories that have been told to us that these spirits actually appeared in very unique bodies and acknowledged the offerings and acknowledged the agreement, so that when we come to the present moment and there are witnesses, there are people standing guard over water, singing, praying, leaving messages of love and joy and harmony and beauty upon the water, within the water, in the presence of the water, in the presence of the water spirit. Those agreements which were made way, 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 way back by the elder women who taught it to the younger women, those agreements are being reiterated, they're being acknowledged, they're being celebrated, they're being joyfully sung about, they're being enacted. And when you have people that, let's say, there's a demonstration and native people appear and let it be known that they are guarding this water source, and they are not in agreement with the way certain things are being done now, because they have the prior agreement of their ancestry that they stand for. I witnessed that in Hawaii on the Big Island. The mountain there, the volcano, which is, you know, bringing forth fire even as we speak, on that mountain, certain consortiums, scientific consortiums, were hoping to establish more telescopes and other electronic equipment and things like that. And I witnessed some of my Hawaiian relatives appearing on the mountain and witnessing for the mountain and reiterating the ancient agreement that they were tied by those agreements to that mountain and the use of that mountain. You know, I witnessed that, and I understood that even if legally and with the minutia of lawyer maneuvering, there would be a denial of the cause of these natives, even if it were to happen that way, they still had to stand, because they still are in the agreement, you know?
Absolutely.
So I witnessed it, and I got it. And it was very helpful to me to see that it's not about winning something. It's about standing for something that has already been agreed upon many, many generations prior. You know, in relationship to the spiritual side of things, not just legal. You know, not just scientific.
Here
anyway,
in the Northwest,
there
are many tribes who are consolidating right now to save the Salish Sea from the pipeline that is proposed. And, that is exactly what's happening. We are standing upon the ancient agreements.
Yes. That is it.
Whether it's effective with the governments isn't really sure. We certainly want the governments to back down, but that's not the core of the issue. The core of the issue is the sea has been here much longer than we have.
Right.
And our ancestors have stood for the sea from the beginning of our time here.
Right.
And we continue to do that no matter what seems to be happening on the outer level.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I agree with that, and I thank you for telling me that. It brings me to the next part of what I had to say about responsibility. You felt the burden or the deep feeling within the body, the calling in the body, to realize that it is based on agreements that preceded our lives and got us to where we are. And these agreements were made with myriad spirits, not just water, not just the mountain, but they were made to all the different sources of food and all the different ways that medicines are used, and all the different customs of what patterns to wear on the body, whether it's a tattoo or whether it's a cloth. All those things were done with consciousness of the responsibility and being accountable through the agreements to the Mother Water and to the Earth, And agreements were made with celestial objects. I could go on. It's there. And it's because you felt that. You mentioned that there was a wave of, I don't know if you said fear or something like that, but it was really like it made you feel something deep inside you that it was more than serious. It was where you stand on the precipice and you decide to live, It's that kind of thing. And so I just wanted to mention agreements and remembering agreements and discovering what agreements obtain, some of which are covered over or which are laid to waste by a frame of intelligence which is being suspicious, being cynical, being ready to doubt, which is really the approach is to assume that something is not good for you and it's going on and you have to find some way to counter it. Well, it's a cultural artifact. It's a way of using the intelligence which can be adjusted. We can respond already without consideration ahead of time and not expectation ahead of time, and just let it be the next moment that's going to happen. Not suspect that something bad will happen. You know, there's reasons why this is done. For instance, the assumption is made in a lot of places that illness is universal. And if illness is universal, then someone can come with funds, do research, and provide medicines, pills, things that will cure what has already been said. It's bad, so we're going to take care of it. But what happens is we have the present medical system, the hospital system, you know, where the assumption is made that everybody's sick and they need pills. They need to buy these things.
And we need to synthesize them, by the way, because the plants aren't good enough.
Good, thank you. Because the, that's right. The impulse is to take advantage of something which is being posited, which is being projected like a monster. It's to take advantage of that because it starts with doubt and starts with fear. It starts with suspicion, you know, and that can be taken care of. We can take care of that. We can learn to be grateful and sing to the water. We can learn to pray in a sweat lodge. We can learn that we don't have to start with fear. It doesn't need to start with fear because those agreements were made so long ago and they were not based on fear. They were based on love. They were based on consideration of, yes, we are here and we have to take care of life. And to take care of life means have a good drink of water, know where the water comes from, take care of it, and then the rest of what our needs might be, whatever they are. Anyway,
you know, you bring up something. You remind me of something that may be important to say. First of all, I want to give thanks to my ancestors, helpers, guides, and all the teachers I've had in this lifetime, because the training that I've received and been blessed with over the years stood me in very good stead during the mudslide. One of my first teachers was a Lakota medicine man named Martin Highbear. And one of the very first things, you probably knew him, one of the very first things that I heard Martin say was there are only two energies. Only two. There's love and there's fear. Wherever there is fear, all that is love must be. Wherever there is great love, all that is fear must appear in order for love to shine its light into it to heal it.
Right.
When I saw the wall of mud coming toward us, there wasn't any time to do anything. I looked at the wall of mud, it hit the house, and I immediately surrendered. And I mean immediate because it only lasted 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And I knew I had a choice. I could fight everything that was swooping around me in the mud, all the furniture and the appliances and all those things, or I could surrender. And my choice was, okay, Spirit, if it's my time and you want me, here I am. And there was no fear.
Yeah.
Yeah? Had I not had all the training I've had from the first time that Martin said that, which was at least 30, 35 years ago, and I've lived by that ever since because I really don't need any other thing in my life except to know those two things.
Uh-huh.
so when this happened, I didn't have to go into fear. I could trust that it was all in its perfection in that moment.
Uh-huh.
And looking back on it, Bob, I really suspect if I had gone into fear and I'd started fighting all those things, I probably wouldn't have survived.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me, that's been a huge teaching because it's the direct proof of everything Martin told me all those years ago.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah? And that proof has been a total release for me. What can I do now except trust that everything is in its right relationship? You know, Chief Seattle said, just because you cut the trees doesn't mean they're not there.
Right.
Yeah? Everything, all the things that have happened to water, the water is still there.
Right.
The sacred waters will reclaim themselves. We may not be here to see it.
Yeah.
If we choose to live from fear.
Right.
If we choose to live from love, we will
yeah.
be here to see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all those ancient agreements, I don't know whether you believe in past lives or not. I do, because this particular valley that I was living in, I came back to because my great-grandmother and great-grandfather, when they dropped off the Trail of Tears in Arkansas, were not comfortable there, so they moved up here to find the forests and the greenery and the rivers again.
Uh-huh.
They helped to establish the little town of Darrington. So when I came here, it was like a homecoming for me, and I know that I was that great-grandmother.
Uh-huh.
I carried much of her medicine. It's now been completed. It's under the mud. It's doing
yeah.
its job there.
Yeah.
It helped to lift up those 43 souls that passed.
Yeah.
Huh? And I don't need it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about, you mentioned Sweat Lodge, and that was one of the themes of this session tonight. And I would like to share some things about what I've been taught about Sweat Lodge, because it is the embodiment of all four of the sacred elements.
Right.
In the way that I was taught, we call our lodge, I'm Okanagan, and we call our lodge Kilstem. And the saplings that we use to create the frame of the lodge are the ribs of Father Sky, the creator.
Mm-hmm.
The ground that we set on, it's the womb of the mother. Those sacred stones that are heated and come into the lodge, they're her eggs. And when we pour the steam on them, it inseminates our prayers and sends them up to spirit.
Uh-huh, yeah.
We're the children of the father and the mother within the womb. So we are truly reborn when we come out of that lodge. And in the way that I've been taught, everything that we pray for in the lodge, that steam takes off all the things that don't serve us and allows us to come out clean and purified so that all those things we've asked for in the lodge can be given to us from all those ancient agreements.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Omi, you must have something to share here.
I'm lying on the floor, curled up in womb position or in fetal position, and I feel like I'm at the feet of my elders, and I feel filled with what you're saying, and I just want to keep on hearing more of the conversation. I don't want to break the flow.
Did I just hear somebody say hello?
I think Cynthia is on.
Hey, Robin, it's
Cynthia. Hi, Cynthia. Yeah, welcome.
I've been trying. And
yeah,
finally
you
got through.
I'm so happy
I'm typing and making a complaint. I'm happy I'm here too. I'm in New Zealand.
Yes, that's what we heard, and we saw you on the dashboard, and then we couldn't hear you, and so we're happy you're here. Robin and Bob and Omi, myself, were on, and maybe Cynthia, you want to just kind of land a little bit, and then if you'd like to join into the conversation, that would be awesome.
Well, let me just say right now, I'm really pleased to be connected, and we've had lots of rain here today and sort of lots of water in our life and lots of blessings, and I feel a great blessing to have connected finally. So I will listen now.
Thank you.
We've had lots of rain up here in the Northwest too, Cynthia, so yay.
Yes, and
yay.
We've had a lot of rain here.
Yes, we have.
You really need it in California, yeah?
Yeah, and we're expecting more tomorrow and the next day. It's supposed to be a very, a big, big lot of water coming, they say.
Okay.
I'm very happy about that. The air is so wonderful because of the rain. It really fortifies my spirit just to breathe when the water has come through.
Yeah, it's been
it must fortify all the spirits, all the elementals.
Today, when Ann and I were walking over by the lake we live nearby, I looked in a little quiet stream that it's barely running. It's so quiet. It's so still, the water. And I looked and I saw thousands of frog eggs. The frogs, I hadn't heard the frogs during the colder time, and just in the last few days I started hearing them. Several different kinds, and now today we saw these frog eggs, thousands of them, you know, placed on the surface of the bed of the little stream.
That's fabulous. We've had salmon running up here, and we have four eagles that have been hanging around my house and going to the creek to fish for the salmon that are spawning.
Yeah, sure. How wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we sang to the water there earlier in the day, and there were Canadian geese. They come over to this pond, this lake, and there were 10 of them, and they didn't fly away. They retreated a little bit, but they were watching and listening.
I'm sure they loved it.
Well, they didn't disagree. Yeah. This is really wonderful, you know, that we don't disturb, we want to somehow accommodate, we want to fit in.
My cat, Nevaeh, and I walked the stream yesterday. Before the rain started, and she looked at all the salmon with me, but she was very respectful. And,
uh-huh.
We sang to the salmon. We have songs up here because salmon is our first food.
Sure.
So we sang to the salmon and thanked them for coming upstream You know, on the day of the mudslide, we lost 10,000 baby Chinook salmon that were in spring flood.
No.
They were returning to the sea, so we weren't sure whether we were going to have salmon up here this year. But,
yeah.
They've come back, so we're very glad.
Good. I know our relatives up around Anchorage, they said that, and some other places too, that the regulations, at least the last season, not this season, where they were not able to get salmon because of the regulations, because the run had been so meager and so faint, and I don't know what's happened with that.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's happening up there right now either.
Yeah.
We've definitely humans have definitely overfished. And we've also polluted a lot of the oceans, so
yeah,
there's a lot that needs to be lifted. And
yeah,
I have people ask me once in a while, does prayer and ceremony really work? So I'll throw that out there for you.
Well, I could take the really out of that. And that is a question which we are free to raise questions, you know. We are. But are we installing a way for us to anticipate the next moment in life by questioning in that way when we already have, with all our heart, we've prayed for certain happenings that we can be a part of, that we can evolve in, that we can go along the road of life and be ready to accept what springs up in the road in front of us and to go along with it, you know. If we have been doing that, then that question about whether prayer works is really coming from a standpoint of saying, if I can think, I can doubt, and therefore I can prove that I'm here. Well, that is one standpoint. But the other way to say it might be, if I can pray for good things no matter what comes ahead in my path, if I can lend myself to the unfolding of what you were talking about, the unfolding of love, if I can be part of that, how then shall I live? You know, how? What does that mean, that I'm allying myself? I'm agreeing with something. I'm agreeing with something. I'm not doubting it. I'm not questioning it. It's like when I was much younger, I liked to go in ceremony, and many of the older people would encourage me to go in there, and as soon as I had a seat, they would come over and they said, all right, you're taking up a seat that someone else could have used. You must sit there. You may not talk. You may not do anything but pay attention. If you're going to do anything in this ceremony, you're going to become a part of it. You're not going to put yourself in a witness position, which is, you know, that's raising the questions. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I followed my elders around chopping wood and carrying water for about 3 years before I ever opened my mouth.
Yeah, I know. I know. I know. I always had wood ready. I always had gasoline taken care of, paid for, you know, so that once my dad told me, turn around, go back. So we went back. Why? You didn't bring your fire starter. So, yeah.
Yeah. Modern people have been taught to be skeptics. And there is good in that.
Yeah.
Because there are many things that we should be skeptical of.
Yes.
There are many people out there who don't tell the truth.
Yeah.
And what I see with many of the people that I work with who are often starting a spiritual path, starting to acknowledge their own spirituality, let's put it that way, they're very confused. They don't know what to be skeptical about and what not.
Yeah, I know.
Little discernment.
There's a spiritual influence involved. You know, it's not just education. There's ways to prepare a young intelligence with love and with clear boundaries, you know, that is right now there's a confusion as to what it means to live in what they call a free country, you know. To acknowledge that there are things we don't know and we may never know, you know, that is really important, to establish a form of humility that doesn't put a person in a position where they apprehend something. It might be an illusion, but they apprehend it. And it makes it real. There's an invention going on. And there's an inventor's mind that is seeking always to be in power and always running things, you know? And that I can be skeptical about that.
Mm-hmm.
But to raise skepticism to the power of this is how we use our intelligence, well, that's a choice that, you know, that is made by my many, many people that come in contact with young people, and then those young people pick it up, and like you say, there's confusion.
You know, Black Elk said that the longest distance is the 18 inches between the heart and the mind. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what I often work with younger people now is go to your heart.
Yeah.
Your heart always knows. If you feel truth in your heart, you'll know what direction to take.
Yeah.
If it comes from the source of love, that's the direction to go. If you feel fear, it's not the direction to go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that, you know, I also, my other lineage is Cherokee, and the Cherokee believe in the law of opposites. And the law of opposites says that we live in a world of duality, and instead of making duality our opposites, enemies, that they are our friends. We have up, down, in, out, left, right, north, south, land, sea, moon, sun, all those things are opposites. But are they really enemies? Yeah? So in the Cherokee teaching, when we feel fear, it's actually a gift. I hear a lot of people use the word trigger, and I gave up that word.
Yeah.
I now use the word key because for me, when I feel fear, it's a key that unlocks a door. What's behind door number three? Oh, well, that's way more exciting than, oh, I'm triggered and I've got to shoot the gun, right? So when I unlock door number three and find out what that fear is, there's a gift there. There's something that's a teaching for me. Something that is old and wants to be healed. Something that I've been taught that isn't a truth. Yeah? And when I begin to look at that, then the gift in it is that I can transform it.
That's the opportunity. You know, I lived in a house in Morristown, New Jersey, above the Great Swamp in New Jersey, and it was a house that Frank Stanton lived in. It was his home, and he wrote that short story, The Lady or the Tiger. That's the one you were referring to. Yeah, and that's also the house where Theodore Roosevelt, as a young adolescent, came into the decision to go ahead with his life, even though his health was frail. That was the same house I lived in.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Anne is suggesting that, Cynthia, that you talk.
Yes, I'd love that, Cynthia.
Good.
My connection isn't really great, but all the words that I do hear, with some spaces between, are so beautiful. And Robin, what you've been saying is so clear about what Black Elk's message. And just feel such awe and deep respect for everyone that is helping this Gaia, this Mother Earth at this time, to be a cleaner place. Cleaner in everything. Yeah, I know there's meetings in Lima, Peru now on hammering out the agreement that big oil and coal and fracking and countries who want to keep polluting are lobbying really hard to pull us down. And every one of us out there needs to, like, put on our some special energy for the positive, so that we can mount these block people that want to block the pure waters and all the things that we're working for. Our prayers have to be extra strong right now, it seems. And I'm just so pleased with the information that you are revealing on this call, the help that you're giving all of us with our prayers. So I can only thank you.
You know, Cynthia, you've been gone a little while. Did you know that Keystone didn't pass?
No.
Yeah, it was defeated very narrowly, but it was defeated. So the pipeline isn't going through.
Fantastic.
So I'm sure that while you're in New Zealand, you're doing ceremonies. What are you doing down there right now?
Well, I do personal ceremony daily. In fact, more than daily. Anytime I feel that I'm not connected to the universal truth, that which is inside, that is that place inside of us that is our truth. And when fragment, I like to go inside to feel my center, feel my truth. And so I've been doing that prayer anytime I feel caught up in personal fragmentation, and going back to the center and doing work with truth, introspecting myself, holding that ground, and I find that I remembered a teaching from a spiritual person a long time ago. It was directed for my children, that there are seven synonyms for God: truth, life, love, spirit, soul. I'll have to count on my fingers, I've left some out, but like that. And truth and love are really important. And truth without love is an iceberg. And love without truth is a jellyfish that has no backbone. And you know, how important it is to have our inner strength that comes from truth and love. And my daughter's just written to me, because I pray with my children quite a lot, even though one's up in Finn Torn and another's in Florida and my son's in Iowa. And my daughter in Finn Torn said, gentleness and tenderness are the most important thing for me right now, to lead my life with gentleness and tenderness. So these prayers I'm having on a continual basis, and I just finished leading a weekend retreat where we worked with grandmothers, our own personal six grandmothers, our two grandmothers and four great-grandmothers, and with this, everybody felt such a spiritual connection down the ages. And so my prayers right now are for that interconnectedness with truth, starting from our individuality and then expanding out into the world, that we weave a web of everyone connected with truth. And that way there can be no lying, no deceit, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So
beautiful.
That's where I stand with my prayers right now.
Mm. Thank you, Cynthia. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Really appreciate that you're calling all the way from New Zealand, and this, in this subject of the womb of the mother and the womb, how you're talking about the ancestry, the matrilineal ancestry that we all carry. That's really wonderful. And in New Zealand, our dear Maori relatives over there, and the amazing prayers and songs and dances and ways they have, water ways that they have. I just adore them, and that their people, the country there, are so amazing. I wanted to open it up again to Omi Bay. I know that you've been listening, and but I'm wondering if you're inspired to join into this conversation.
I feel that so much has been said that, you know, I remember many years ago when I was initiated as a Crown of Oshun, the elder priest who initiated me, he came back to me a few days later and said, the oracle said, even though you are young, you are now considered an elder. And he said the first role of an elder is to learn to listen. So sometimes there's a time for me to talk, but today I genuinely feel like there's so much water flowing that I can feel Mama's energy and the ancestors' energy bringing forth these important messages through Robin, Bob, and those who are talking right now that I genuinely, and I, there's so much I could say, but I think it's all actually being said. I'd rather listen and allow that energy to just keep on flowing forth. So I think maybe Olu has something to say, though.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
Okay.
Yes, Ashe Ahu. Would say that this has been awesome, and I must share what experience I had when Robin was talking about the her journey, you know, being initiated and how it brought so much weight on her world. You know, we talk a lot about the hero's journey. And we reflect on Jonah and the well, how he resisted a path and eventually got put in the well and didn't get out until he agreed to take that journey on, what God was asking of him to do. And then he got, you know, ejected from the well through that experience. Now reflects Robin's journey, in my opinion. And when she went through the mudslide, you know, and she accepted her journey, and now she's been brought back to this existence, this time and this space, to bring forth these great wisdoms and share the dance. And I say that is a wonderful, powerful message, because there's like, you know, it's a lot easier to connect with someone you know than someone who may have lived thousands of years ago, like Jonah. And that's one thing. Another thing is the dance. I remember, and you were talking about the ceremonies in 2012, the prayers and the dance, and so I recalled when we did the water song on it. It was birthed in June of 2012, and it was the Venus transit that was provoking our activities, and what we were honoring that Venus transit that occurred actually physically over 3 days, but it was when Venus was moving from one side in the sunset in the east all the way to the other side of the world in the sunrise. I mean, it was a sunset in the west to the sunrise in the east in those 3 days, and it reappeared that morning right before the sunrise. And, you know, I've never noticed that occur, but what I'm saying is that that was a dance. That was a celestial dance. And as it is in the heavens, it is below. We are dancing. They are dancing. And we are emulating exactly what is going on in the cosmic order, in the cosmos, in the heavens. And we should continue to do the dancing, because they are dancing. And I feel great hope and very powerful transformation and change occurring, and joy as a result of the work that you all are doing, that we all are doing, the dancing, the prayers, and the ceremony has had a great impact. It's kept people alive. It's cleaned rivers, it's stopped dams, it's stopped pipelines, and it's given people hope, which is one of the most important things during the darkness, is to be a light. And so in answer to your question earlier, which I think was a quite profound question, you know, does ceremony and prayer work? I would say through experience, through my short lifetime, I know that prayer and ceremony, the lack of prayer and ceremony, doesn't work, does not work. that we are in the situation we are in mostly because we stopped praying and we stopped having ceremony and truly feel like we should be praying without ceasing, that our life should be a continuous ceremony. And the other part of that is this medicine wheel that you opened up and surrounded us with is a very powerful ceremony. And it enables this kind of flow, ebb and flow, conversation and love and compassion and wisdom and teachings. But what it also allows is it allows the energies of the ancestors from all the directions and from all the peoples and animals and beings to come in and interact with us. And to that point, I saw some great being come in when you were talking about the mudslide. I don't know why, but I'm being told that I must share with you that this was, it looked to me like a large dragon. And this dragon just kind of, when you were speaking, and when you finished speaking about it, it just kind of like curled up, put his tail, wrapped it around his feet, and sat down where you were, as if it was now in the circle with us in this conversation and saying, yes, yes, we are here. We're here with you. And it's brought great power to this conversation to me, because what it made me realize is that we all have these ancestors that are engaged in this conversation. We're bringing them down by our ceremonies and by our prayers and by our intentions. And their feet are on this earth as well. And they are glad to be here. They're glad because they have people here who are listening and who are acting and who are duplicating what they have received as visions. And they're enacting them on earth and sharing them with people and actually doing the things that we should have been doing from the get-go and never ceased. And we should never cease it again. And so this energy is very, very powerful, and I welcome your ancestors, our ancestors, all the ancestors from all these different beings and life forms and people who are connected to this call. I'm telling you, they are dancing, and so shall we. Ashe, Aho.
Ashe,
Ashe.
Ashe,
oh,
I love you. I have to tell a story now. In 2011, was it 2011 that Fukushima happened? I think so.
Yes.
Right after Fukushima, a student friend came to me who wanted to open her third eye and be able to vision because she'd never been able to vision, even though she'd journeyed for a long time. And so I said, okay, well, we'll do this, right? And we made a prayer, and boom, this huge dragon appeared. Huge. He was bigger than the ceiling in the room. And big blue dragon. And he told us that we needed to be honoring the dragon people. He showed us the four guardian gatekeepers of the four directions. And the dragon in the east was yellow, and it was fading away because nobody believed. And the dragon in the south is red and in charge of all the volcanoes and earthquakes. And he was, pardon my French, pissed. Okay? The dragon in the west was black and laying under Fukushima trying to absorb all the radiation. And the dragon in the north was ice, and she was melting. And what he told us is that we had forgotten to do the ceremonies for the dragon beings, and that these dragon keepers of the four directions have a job to do to keep everything in balance, and they can't do it if we don't give them food. They're starving. Yeah? A week later, Dr. Emoto sent a letter around the world by email talking about the same thing. So ever since that point, Ava and I and many others who know this story and who've had their own connections with the dragon beings, we started to do ceremonies at the waters, at the fires, for the earth, and for the air, for all of these dragons, yeah?
Hmm.
And you're right. The dragon is here tonight, and he's overjoyed hearing what we're talking about. And I thank you so much for that. One of the other things that came through when you were talking is that all indigenous people dance.
Hmm.
All indigenous people drum. All indigenous people sing. The modern culture has forgotten how to do that. We need to dance and sing. We need to celebrate and have ceremony. It's in our DNA, and when we don't do it, we hurt. It creates dis-ease and discomfort in our bodies. It's precious what you said. I'm really, really touched by it. Thank you.
I say. You know,
thank you.
I would just, I'm sorry, I just wanted to reflect on part of that. One is that you've been posting this message about the Native Americans dance, this movie that's coming out. I think that's really awesome. And it's a universal, it's a need for everybody in the world to participate in that, because it's true about everybody. We all need to dance, sing, and praise. Secondly, and Africans were brought here and enslaved and brought to America. They took from us the drum. They took from us the capacity to have the rhythm and to have the dance and the ceremony, everything that we considered sacred and part of our communication, our culture, but it really affected the ability for us to dance and communicate through the dance and tell the stories. And we took our language, we could not speak our language, we could not dance, no drumming, nothing. And so till recently, we have not really had the ability to do that. And that was for a purpose. Because without ceremony, without that connection to your ancestors, you're broken in a deep way. So I agree that this is something that we all need to do and re-heal and reconnect. And I love the fact that the Native Americans are taking a lead role in bringing back a culture. And I think one of the things that was said in that preview was that we are either going to die or we're going to be able to live again.
Aho.
Tashe. Aho.
You know, it reminds me also during apartheid in South Africa, one of the things that the children did was they took to the streets and sang and drummed and danced. There was actually a movie about it. I don't remember the name of the movie, but part of the reason that apartheid worked, that it broke that chain of oppression, and not that there isn't still oppression in Africa, there's plenty of oppression, and it broke a great deal of that controlling oppression. The reason that it did is because the children knew that they had to sing and dance and celebrate, no matter what. You know, the Haudenosaunee Iroquois definition of warrior is quite different than what Americans think of as a warrior. It's one who carries the blood and the bones of the ancestors and the earth on their back.
I see.
When you carry the... We walk on our ancestors every day. All those who lived before lay beneath us in the earth. Yeah? When we carry that on our back, that history, that knowledge, that wisdom, those ceremonies, those prayers, those agreements that Bob talked about, and when we acknowledge that on a daily basis and do those ceremonies that Cynthia's talking about within ourselves, we can't help but live a celebratory life.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you for mentioning the dragon when you were talking about the mudslide. The visual that I saw was the way the mud is moving. It's really embodied water is what it is, mud. And it was moving like a dragon. In the visual that I got.
One very quick dragon, let me tell you.
Yeah, oh yeah, sure. Yeah. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not, thank you for bringing in the dragons. They are definitely my friends as well. And I honor them and their pure life force energy. And when we were in Sweden with the Grandma's Council, the women who had brought the grandmothers to Sweden realized early on that they needed to renew their ceremonies to the Mother Dragon, and that she was angry because she hadn't offerings had not been made for so many centuries, and in all places the dragon is she is the primordial womb of the mother. Her life force is that which sparks all life.
It's no mistake that when Christianity decided to become an oppressor, that they created stories like St. George killing the dragon.
Exactly, and St. Michael, and also then they banished the snake, you know. So the reclamation of the serpent and the winged dragon, it's all part of this waking up to the ceremonial ways, to the full life force, full embodied life force ways. This is when the people are strong, we are connected in that way to that core. And then it's internal authority rather than externalized authority, a maz, which we are humbled by, connected to that larger web of authority. So I'm so grateful for this amazing conversation here. So wonderful. And we have about 15 minutes more. I did want to see if some of our wonderful participants who've been listening so patiently may want to join in. I wanted to give them an opportunity at this time. So if anyone on the call would like to share, please press 1 on your keypad, and then you will raise your hand. Virtual or audio, raising your hand. I want to give you an opportunity. It looks like there may be a lot of people curled up at the feet of the elders here because no one is raising their hand, and I honor that. I just wanted to give an opportunity. Thank you. Oh, somebody raised their hand. All right, Anne Holmes. Looks like your mic is open for you. Please, welcome.
Thank you. Am I clear? Coming through?
You sure are. We hear you.
Yes.
Well, I just want to really deeply express my gratitude for being on this call with all of you and for your generosity in sharing from your heart and from your wisdom. And I just want to share with you, because I don't know how it is for all you, because you're just really giving us such a wealth of experience. And as I'm sitting here, in my living room listening, you know, I just want to share with you that I just really am so moved, and I go through these calls and I am filled with tears. I'm filled all the time with gratitude and such, you know, such honor, just really, really deep honor, and such a powerful life force and space that's created by this gathering. And I just really, really wanted to share again my gratitude of being able to be present and learn from all the teachings that you're so generously sharing with us, and expand my own practices, and then also be validated for, you know, I don't come from a tradition of elders, so what I have gotten has basically been through my own inner dialogues and my own spirits, and, you know, I have gone through different traditions, but when I hear you all talking about the dancing on the earth, and 2 years ago I started dancing on the earth, it is just such a strong connection, you know, to know that this, we are in a space where those of us who are love the earth and have a dedication to the earth really are a web, you know, we are really a family, even though we don't know each other. So I just really wanted to share that in deep, deep gratitude.
Thank you. Thank you, Anne. Your gratitude is good medicine. It waters the teachings. Thank you. I see Char Richardson. You have your hand up, too. We'd love to hear from you.
Yes. Actually, yes, I'm sitting here with some friends of mine. Shanti would like to ask a question.
Blessings to all my relations. Such an honor to be on this call. I'm calling representing what we're calling Warriors of Peace, the Rainbow Nation, and I was hoping you could share some insights on what you know of the prophecies of the Rainbow Warriors coming at this time, the seventh generation that was foretold, and what advice you could give to those among us who are listening on how we can best serve the greater good to fulfill our mission.
Thank you, Shanti. This is Anne over here, and I want to say that thank you for your question. And the whole next session is about the era of prophecies of this time. And so we have about 10 minutes right now if people on the call, any one of us wanted to share, but I just also want to say that we're going to be spending the whole time next time covering the topic of prophecies. And so I hope you're on the call again. And Bob wanted to say something, and maybe somebody else on the call would like to respond. So thank you.
Hey, Shanti. Thank you. I just want to respond out of respect for your question. A warrior with the word war in the title is definitely a misunderstood person, because the step forward is more important than having war as the first thing that you hear, you know. The step forward, not the hesitation, not the doubt, not the wondering, oh, what's this all about, but being willing to step forward. There is a clan called the Star Clan, and you now see them in Native American powwows initiating the very first ceremony of the powwow is a gourd dance, which is done by the Star Clan members. The members of the Star Clan were in many, many different societies, different cultures, different tribes, different lineages, their how you knew them is they never backed up. They never backed up. That doesn't mean that they went to war and they, you know, carried the flag. No. It means that in the attitude towards the path of life, it was always forward. And to me, it's very important to ponder this and to remember this. And if you are going to step forward, you have to do it on the basis of understanding yourself, of checking out your inner reality, you know, of examining yourself, which has been mentioned already tonight, and stepping forward with an attitude of love and truth, you know, so that the person who, for instance, I heard someone saying they're dancing on the earth. They're bringing that into their life. This is initiating a path that is going forward. The spirits, the old spirits, they're watching. They're waiting. They're willing to witness us taking care of these things. Which will, of course, it strengthens us and gives us health and happiness, but it also is noticed. It's being witnessed by the unseen. And I just want you to know that the way of the warrior, if you want to use that word warrior, the way of the warrior is initiating on the path of life, a path which you trust. From the inside, from the light that's within you. That's about all I could say about that right now. Maybe I said too much.
Thank you. Also, this is Char again, and I had just wanted to make a statement. We are all in Manitou Springs, just west of Colorado Springs, where there are 7 sacred springs of water that spring forth from at the base of Garden of the Gods, which is very sacred, I wonderful space. I spend so much time there. And we are wanting to really learn more about how to become stewards of this water, this sacred water that comes from deep within our earth. And for the healing of all, and we really just want to become stewards for that and foster that and, you know, so that it spreads and grows and that we are able to teach, you know, our community how to respect and love and honor these 7 sacred springs that are in this very, very sacred land that we occupy at this time.
I have 2 suggestions for you. One is invite some of the Water Songline Council to come and do ceremony there and to share these ceremonies with you for the
sacred
water.
Please do. Please, we invite you. We invite you.
The second is that in your area, he's actually in hospital right now and needs our prayers. He had blood clots in his lungs, but our Sundance leader chief is from Colorado Springs. His name is Jeff Lujan, and you can connect with him on Facebook. He's a very wise and gentle man, and I'm sure you could learn much from him.
Can you please spell his last name for me, please?
L-U-J-A-N.
Thank you so much. We will connect with him.
We will pray
for him, and we will continue to pray over the water.
Thank you for what you're doing.
Yes.
And the third thing I would say is because the word warrior is used so incorrectly in today's world, I've come to a place where I've changed that word for myself to protector.
Hmm. That's excellent. That's an excellent shift, paradigm shift as well. So thank you for that.
Aho.
Yeah, thank you.
And can I just interject one little thing?
Of course, yeah.
So as you go to the waters, and that sounds like an awesome place that I wish you could share pictures and, oh, I would love water from that place. But anyway, that's personal. Secondly,
I brought this water actually to the Unity concert and gave it to Reverend Honea from Between the Rocks in Manitou Springs, yeah.
That's exactly right. Secondly, I would, as you sit, pray, meditate, and do ceremonies there, when you return home and have messages and dreams and visions, I would start a journal dedicated to the messages from the water. Because you are going to get messages, and they are very meaningful. And however those messages come, if you would journalize them, over time you will see what value that experience brought.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
One of the things that might be helpful to you is to take a small container of that water to your dream time with you. Sleep with it. Let it dream you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would just wanted to say that by bringing this up about the Manitou Springs, you've put a prayer in motion, and you've shared it with us. So now you can follow that prayer.
And I want to say thank you to everybody that's contributed, even in their silence and their listening, to this circle. And to the seeds that have been planted for the prayers in the future, for the relationships that are being woven here, may they continue. And I was wondering, Robin, I had the thought that because you started us with the prayer, I'm wondering if you would close this beautiful circle that we've opened with a prayer.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I would have silently, if not.
Yes.
Before I do that, I'd also like to thank the group from Manitou Springs. Manitou, of course, means Great Spirit, so a very important place on Mother Earth. And I also want to say that I'm sure all of us can be connected for future conversations with you through Facebook or emails or through the Center for Sacred Studies. Yeah.
Well, through Water Songline.
And through Water Songline.
Yeah.
All of us have Facebook pages, so.
Yeah. And the Water Songline email is info@watersongline.com. And then you can go right onto Water Songline and connect up with us. And that's where we can continue to grow the confluence of prayers. That might be actually the most effective way to connect within to touch into all the council, and then we can make relations individual. And like this invitation, let's keep it in motion. That's wonderful.
Also, there was a suggestion last time that people put prayers, post prayers and songs on the Water Songline page.
Yeah.
And those prayers can be used in things like Dance to Heal the Earth. Yeah? Those songs can be used with the drum to do your ceremonies as well as any ceremonies around the earth to help bless the waters and to purify them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so grandmothers and grandfathers, Wonkatanka, Tukashala, Kulanchu, all those who have been present today, the dragon beings, the star nations, all our ancestors and helpers who've been with us, we give you our thanks. We thank you for directing this conversation and bringing out these teachings and inspiring each of us to do more, to give of ourselves more, to find the ways that we can inspire others. And we thank you for our connections here today, and that these connections will be ongoing, that we are part of the web of creation. We thank you for the truths that have been revealed here, and for the ways that those truths will impact and affect us in our lives, and they will ripple out to affect others as well. We give thanks in this moment for the power of sound, of the spoken word, and for all that will come for this as it ripples out across worlds, nations, and the universe. I give thanks to our dragon friends who have been with us tonight, who hold so much space in the unseen world for us. And I give honor and appreciation and gratitude to these beings for keeping us here on the planet and for birthing us time and time again from the sacred womb of the mother. I give thanks for each and every one of those who have been on this call and each and every one of those who will listen to the call at a later time. And at this moment in time, I release all of those who have been with us. You've heard our prayers, those spoken and unspoken. I ask you now to take them out into your realms and your dimensions and to work with us on these things so that what was started in this moment continues and grows and is nurtured and is said in such a way that it ever continuously expands throughout the universe. Aho, Takuya.
Aho.
Ashe.
Ashe.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Yes, beautiful. And for those of us on the council, we're going to break out into the green room. Thank everybody else. We will meet again next week.
Aho.
Aho.